Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and as we continue our build up towards the game that Mikel Arteta has described as a final, I'm delighted to be joined by a very special guest. I'm joined by Jess from She Knows Arsenal. Jess, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome to the program. Delighted to have you on. It's been a while coming. I've been trying to get it arranged, and I've got to say it's been my fault that it hasn't happened so far. So I'm delighted to have you on. First of all, how are you keeping over there in the States? How's things?
Oh, yeah. Things are, you know, still coronavirus, obviously, similar to everywhere else in the world. I'm a little bit worried. I know we kind of talked about this backstage a little bit, but I am worried about summer coming around. Our summer comes a little bit quicker than others, and I just don't see people not going to the beach, not going out, not doing what they want to do. So I'm a little bit worried about it, but I'm hoping that, you know, by the time we get to the summertime, you know, maybe things have calmed down. But it's just like that weird in-between space. We're locked down, but we're not, you know, so I don't know. I'm just praying that we can get through this as a country and as, you know, worldwide and all that kind of stuff, because this has been going on for a year now, you know.
For sure. And it's made us realize, I think, that we take a lot of things for granted. I mean, I used to take it for granted going down to the Emirates Stadium. You know, I've really missed that. It's a massive part of my life. And I know there are worse things in the world, of course, that people are missing out on. But for me, It's been tough. You know, you live at home, you work at home, you eat at home, you sleep at home. There's no really real ability to go anywhere and get back to normality. So it has been tough. But let's turn our attention to the big game. Now, Mikel Arteta has been speaking ahead of the game against Benfica tomorrow night. We'll be bringing you a live watch along right here on the Chronicles of Aguna YouTube channel. So if you're listening to us via the audio platforms, then feel free to wander over to the YouTube channel and you can join us for live coverage of that one. It's huge. And I can't help, Jess, but look back at the first leg and feel as though Arsenal should have done more. You know, we've discussed it on previous shows. Arsenal should have really put the tie to bed by now. How worried are you that we might live to regret not killing Benfica off in that first leg?
I mean, I'm very worried about it, to be honest, you know, because for me, with this particular Arsenal team, the other team doesn't necessarily need to beat us to win the game. We could beat ourselves, you know, and I think that that's ultimately what's been going on. It's not like we're always the worst team, you know. A lot of times we have the better chances, we have the most possession, you know, it's just we didn't take care of business. And that's ultimately what happened in the very first leg. If Aubameyang finishes one or two of those chances, we're not talking about this, we're through, we're happy. But now we have this sense of nervousness, a little bit of sense of regret. So, you know, I just think the team needs to come out ready to go. Like, it's not just about Arteta, it's about the team. They have to mentally want to get out there, get a goal under their belt early. And then, you know, my biggest fear is that we'll get to the 60th minute 0-0 and then Benfica tries to go for it. That's the last thing we want to happen, you know, with a shaky, nervous, unconfident Arsenal side. So I'm a little bit worried. I'm sure that they're probably a little bit nervous, but they have to shake that off because this is the most important game of the season.
For sure it is. And you mentioned Mikel Arteta there. It's been a lot of debate lately around whether he is the right man to take Arsenal forward. Arsenal find themselves in an unacceptable league position. You know, there's no getting away from that. But I feel that there is some progress. I feel like sometimes you have to scratch a little bit beneath the surface to find that progress and to be able to identify the areas in which we have moved forward. But where do you stand on Mikel Arteta, Jess? How are you feeling about him and whether he is the man to be trusted for a little while longer?
You know, it's so difficult because it's like, I like Mikel Arteta. So I like him as a person. Like, I think he's, you know, he articulates himself well. I feel like he's trying to play football the right way. He's trying to do the right things to get Arsenal where they need to be. But ultimately, he's such a novice manager that I feel like a lot of the mistakes that he's making, you know, they would be a little bit, they wouldn't be as egregious if he had a better squad. You know, we don't have the greatest squad. We don't have a very experienced manager. So I feel like that combination together is not really working, especially with a club of Arsenal's pedigree. You know, it's just 10th place and potentially out of every single competition in February, early March, to me is unacceptable. But based on the fact that Arteta is inexperienced, you do have to give him a little bit of a leash, right? I think for me, I think Arteta is a great coach. I give him all the credit for being able to set the team up right, you know, what's happening with Saka, with his, you know, his growth this season, even Pepe to a certain extent. Like, a lot of these players have improved based on what Arteta has done on the training pitch. But what I do question is Arteta the manager. And that is the part of Arteta that needs to improve, and it needs to improve quickly. You know, I don't think it should take Arteta, you know, 3 seasons to figure out how to make this work. You know, I think I want to see progress game by game by game. But again, the squad is not that great. You know, so for me, I'm just in that in-between space of this is inconclusive, whether he's the right man for the job. I think that there's been too many things happening outside of the actual pitch that have kind of changed the trajectory of what he's trying to do. So for me, I'm like, I know he's not going anywhere. I think a lot of Arsenal fans need to understand that. Like, I don't think he's going anywhere, even if he loses this game tomorrow. I don't think he's going anywhere. Agreed. So, yeah, I think we need to give him a transfer window where he's actually backed. You know, if he's not backed, they sold him down the river. You know, but if he's backed and then we get to December, next December, and we're still in the same place, then we need to start asking questions. You know, but right now, for me, it's just, I like him. I think he's doing the right things. But I think the combination of the bad squad and him being inexperienced is not working. So something needs to give. The squad needs to get better and he needs to improve, period.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think as a manager, he has at times shown an immaturity, a lack of experience. I think his handling of certain situations at times with certain individuals has maybe been found wanting a little bit, and he could improve in that sense. But I think that people very quickly forget what a difficult job this was when he took it. And you've got to consider all the things that you've mentioned, you know, the off the field stuff, that I think the pandemic has had a massive impact. Not having fans in the stadium, you know, some would argue that he's actually benefited from that, because a packed Emirates stadium would not accept some of the performances that we've seen on our own patch this season. And I agree with that. However, you know, you can't underestimate how hollow it must feel being a football manager or being a football player and playing in an empty stadium. And I think he alluded to that in today's press conference, that it has been very difficult and a bit of an issue. And I think that he will, he is looking forward to fans coming back. One of the big bits of news that came out of the press conference today was that Thomas Partey is in contention to face Benfica. Now, call me negative, but I'm a little bit worried about this, because we've already seen him come back once and break down because he was brought back too early in the Tottenham game after he suffered that initial injury against Villa. Picked up a separate injury this time, so it's completely non-related. But I do worry that a hamstring problem, to recover from it so quickly, doesn't quite feel right with me. And I still wouldn't start Thomas Partey tomorrow, even if he does pass the fitness tests. Where do you stand on it?
You know, Thomas Partey needs to stay out a little bit longer. I just think if we want him to be usable for the rest of the season, I don't see why we would bring him into this match. It's too, if you remember, if you go back to the Tottenham game, you could tell that Thomas was trying really hard to impose himself on that game, but he wasn't 100%. He'll do the exact same thing in this Benfica game, knowing how important it is. And that's going to put him in a position to maybe get injured, where we have Xhaka, we have Ceballos. These players they're fit, you know, and they should be enough to beat this Benfica side. This Benfica side is not that good. We just didn't play that well, you know. So for me to risk him in a game like this, where I know Thomas Partey is the type of player, because he's an elite type of athlete, he's going to want to impose himself and put himself in danger of getting another injury. And we just, if he gets injured this time, you know, will he come back? You know, will it be the rest of the season out? So I definitely wouldn't start him. You know, I maybe have him on the bench just in case, but I think Ceballos and Xhaka should be able to handle this. I mean, it's Benfica. They're going to sit back. I think they're going to do exactly what they did last time. Sit in, try to be really structured and just kind of hold their shape. And then at 30 minutes or 30 minutes out, if they don't, if it's 0-0, then they'll try to go for it. I don't see them coming out on us. I don't see anything like that. So I wouldn't risk him. I think Arteta needs to learn. Don't risk. Don't risk particular players, even if they're in your ear saying, I'm ready, I'm ready. Don't do it, because he's not. I don't think he'll be ready.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think you're right about Benfica and the way they're probably going to approach this game. They were very pragmatic in the first leg in the early stages. And that was because there was that risk of conceding the away goal, of course, which we know could be significant come the end of the tie. But now they're in a position where they've conceded an away goal and they need to score one, because if the game finishes 0-0, then Arsenal go through. So at some point in the game, Benfica are going to have to open up, be a little bit more expansive. And I think Arsenal have to be very professional in the way they manage this game and take their chances. Because look, let's be honest, you know, one of the biggest issues we've had under Mikel Arteta recently is that we've just not taken chances when they've come our way. There's been games that we haven't won when really, when you look on the balance of play, we probably should have. So it's been a little bit frustrating. It's been a little bit difficult. And Jess is getting loads of love in the comments as well.
Thanks, guys. I see you.
She can see you. There you go. Jess, let them know how they can, before I forget, because I might forget at the end, let them know how they can follow you on Twitter about the She Knows Arsenal show and where they can find that.
Yeah, you guys. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at It's Jessinho. I'm on there all the time. And I love, like, you know, playful banter and, you know, polls and just having fun with people in the comments, as long as it's respectful. And if you want to find me for the She Knows Arsenal show, you can just go into YouTube, put in hashtag She Knows Arsenal, and there the show will pop up. It's right there. It's my face. You'll see me. I'm right there. And I also have my own channel that's Jessinho TV. So if you want to follow that too, you can. And yeah, that's where you can find me. So yeah.
Make sure you do so. Just a quick reminder as well, this show is sponsored by Manscaped. So a big thank you to Manscaped for supporting us. If your Forbidden Forest is in need of some tidying up, then head over to manscaped.com, enter the promo code, which is 90min20, 90 min20, and you will receive 20% off and free shipping. I'm so embarrassed that I've just had to say that in front of Jess, but there you go.
I love it.
It's brilliant stuff. No, jokes aside, it's a fantastic product, and I thank them.
I see it everywhere, so I know it has to be like elite level. Like, yeah,
They've taken over the world. Honestly, they've taken over the world. It's incredible. Yeah. And they just send you packages just like that. It's brilliant. So yeah, make sure you check out Manscaped. And of course, if you're interested in becoming a member of our channel, you can do so by clicking on the link in the description. There are a number of benefits available, and you can see the different tiers and decide which, if any of those, apply to you. So check them out. Right, let's get back to football and let's talk a little bit about Granit Xhaka. He's also faced the media ahead of this game against Benfica. He's been talking about a number of things. He talked about how impressed he's been with Thomas Partey and what a good partnership those two could form. He's talked a lot as well about abuse, which is something that's been a massive topic of late. And I put a tweet out yesterday when people were complaining about Hector Bellerin, maybe, which we don't even know for sure, maybe wanting to leave the club. And I put a tweet out basically along the lines of, well, I wouldn't be surprised if the abuse that he receives has contributed to that. These people are not Arsenal fans. They claim to be, but they're not. For me, I can sit there and I can pull apart a player's performance and I can say, I didn't think it was good enough for this reason, and this reason. I didn't think the team was right, etc., etc. But the minute it becomes personal, you've gone off the rails. And quite frankly, you're being a bit of a prick. There's no need for it. Granit Xhaka has spoken about it, about the abuse that he's received towards his kid, towards his wife. He said it himself. I'm the one on the pitch, not them. So if you want to direct the criticism at me, that's absolutely fine. Just something's got to be done about this thing, because this has gotten really out of hand, and it's because there is no accountability on social media. I mean, people like me or you, we go on social media and we use our names, right? So I'm accountable for what I say. I'm accountable for what I do. But there's people who, and it's fine if you want to keep your identity quiet, but you can't be allowed to get away with things like that and then just be able to wash your hands of the responsibility. It's gone nuts.
It definitely has. You know, for me, it's, I don't understand it. I really, it just doesn't make sense to me why you would go on to anybody's page, whether it's, you know, a football player or just some other person, and abuse them, talk about their family, wanting them to commit suicide, or, you know, you want their kid to whatever, like those types of things. I don't get it. It doesn't do anything but make you look like an ass. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know if I can say that, but that's what it is, you know? So, in regards to what we can do, it's difficult because it's already out of control. It's to the point where, you know, Twitter and, you know, the social media, they can't really, they're having a hard time policing something that people feel like they have the right to have, which is the freedom of speech, right? You know, and I don't think they want to police it to the point where they lose a lot of users, because a lot of people come onto social media to speak their mind. And some people just, they don't do this on a normal basis. They would never be able to get away with this in person, you know, so they go online to do it in secret and in the shadows. So I think it's like a weird situation that the social media companies are in, where they know that they need to do something, but they don't want to police it so hard that people don't feel like they can say what they want to say. Because once you start policing it, then you have to define what abuse is. And a lot of things can fall under abuse, you know, that are really on the line, you know, so I don't know what they can do. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, because it's a really difficult situation to be in. But as fans, like, we should feel, regardless if you like the player or not, like, I haven't been Xhaka's biggest fan or Mustafi, but some of the things that they've been subjected to over the last couple of years has been vile, you know. And you're not a fan of Arsenal, you're not a football fan in general if you go onto their pages and abuse them. If you don't want them on the team, that's fine, but they're here and they're human, and you would never want people to say something like that to you. Just because they make money doesn't mean that they should be talked to in a certain way, talked down to. And you should really kind of check yourself and, you know, evaluate how you, like, if you can't enjoy football and you can't just keep it on the screen and let them do their job without abusing them, then maybe you should stop watching, because this is not for you if that's how you're going to keep going. Like, it's just, it's crazy.
Exactly. And, you know, we've all lost our rag over a game of football. I certainly have in years gone by. And it's just, you know, you've got to keep a lid on it when it gets to that point where you're in the zone where you could overstep the mark. And I know a lot of people will say things and then say and then regret it afterwards and did it in the heat of the moment. But it's, you've got to be able to control that. It's really, really important. And a good question from Jasha. Harry and Jess, have you guys had any experiences with abuse on social media? I don't know about you, Jess, but I certainly have. I've had loads of it. The more I've been doing this kind of work, the more I've had. And most of it, I just brush it under the carpet and I get on with it. Most of it doesn't affect me. Most of it doesn't bother me. Most of it just bounces back off of me. But there have been a couple of times where I've been rattled, and I've got to admit, and I've probably responded in a way that I regretted afterwards. But just like Granit Xhaka says, the times I've been rattled is when it's become about something wider than talking about football. I've had abuse directed towards my son. I had an email from a complete randomer telling me that he hopes my son gets cancer and dies. So that's the kind, because I wanted Unai Emery to leave the club. So that line, once that line gets crossed, you just escalate things to a whole new level. So I've had plenty of experience of it, and I can understand why players may fall out of love with a club off the back of that, may want to leave off the back of that, and why players looking in at the club from the outside, potential sign-ins, would think, do I really want to come and play for this fan base?
Yeah. I mean, I've never been abused before on social media. up to this point. I mean, people have said mean things to me, but it takes a lot for me to get upset over things, because if you're a faceless individual on the internet talking about things that you don't know about me, you know, I'm just going to ignore you, you know? So I've been called an idiot and, you know, this and stuff like that, but no abuse to the point where I've been like super upset. But I have seen things about other people that I think is just, I don't understand, you know, Ari, I don't understand it. Like, I don't know what they're getting out of it. I don't know why they take it to that level, but for somebody to say that you want somebody in their family to die or something because of a coach, or again, you need to sit down, you know, by yourself in a corner and really evaluate your life, because this, if you can't just be a part of this community without abusing people, then you don't need to be in it, period. You know?
Agreed. Let's go over to the comments as well and see what you guys are saying. You know, lots of people sort of condemning the abuse on social media and talking about how disrespectful it is, and I completely agree with that. T-Talks also says, though, online abuse will never be completely eradicated. Deterrents need to be put in place, but sadly, it'll only be more likely the bigger the platform becomes. Yeah, look, I agree that it's impossible to get rid of it, but there's got to be examples made, I think, of the people that do it, so that it does calm down a little bit. Let's get back to the football, though. And you know, a lot of people were feeling quite dejected after that Manchester City game. Me, not so much. I looked at it as a game that I didn't really deep down think that Arsenal could win. I might have tongue-in-cheek predicted an Arsenal win on a couple of different shows, but really deep down, you know, if I had to bet my house on it, I wouldn't have bet on Arsenal to get anything out of that game. We stayed in the game for 88 minutes, having conceded a stupid goal early on. What was your assessment of the Manchester City game, and what was your feelings coming off of the back of it?
Okay, so I'm going to be honest. Like, you're saying that we were in it in the scoreline, yes, but I think in reality we weren't. Like, I didn't feel like we were in it. If it was one of those, like, we don't look like scoring, you know, at all. You know, it was just like a really weird feeling, because it didn't feel like either team was really pressed about it. It was like our team was like, cool, not going to win. They were like, cool, 1-0. You know, so it was like, it was disappointing to me, because all I really asked for was a performance. Regardless of who was out there on the field, even if it was a rotated squad, I kind of felt like I wanted to see them really go for it. But I think the occasion, you know, the early goal against, and just the fact that that team was super, super strong, just kind of took the wind out of our sails, and we just kind of never really, really put a foot forward to like try to do something in that game. I know that we had some decent buildup, but we had it like, did we have a shot on goal? Like, I'm not sure. Like, you know, it was another lackluster performance against a team that I know is probably the best team in Europe, so we're not expected to do anything, but I'd just like to see us go for it once in a while. But with Arteta, I'm noticing that he's really risk adverse, a little cautious. So I don't know why I was thinking that there would be like some like, okay, let's just go ahead and do it. He was always going to be, you know, in the system, stay structured, stay in your shape, then just kind of attack in a certain way. So I would say I was more disappointed by the fact that we didn't really put in a performance, and it just kind of felt like we just accepted the 1-0. That's what it felt like to me. And the fact that if we were going to just kind of put in like a, you know, just a medium type of here we are type of performance, not really going after it, I think certain players probably should have been rested for the Benfica game, like Saka, maybe Tierney. I know, I think they're, now that I'm thinking about it, they're probably trying to play him into some form. You know, but yeah. Saka, maybe even Aubameyang could have rested in that game if we weren't really going to try to like win it, you know, because Saka looks tired to me. Like, I don't know.
He does. And he's young, and he needs a rest, and he needs to be managed properly. It's just at the minute we've been so reliant on him that you feel like taking him out of the team could have a really negative impact. And I can understand why in the lead up to what is a very, very important game, as we've discussed tomorrow, Mikel maybe didn't want to do that. I guess, look, I totally get what you're saying, and I respect the opinion, you know, the fact that Arsenal didn't really push. The only thing I would kind of say is, as someone who lived through many of the hidings that we got off the back of Arsene Wenger's team going toe-to-toe with teams that were much better than us and getting pulled apart. I actually go into these games now under Mikel Arteta and I don't feel as though we're going to be embarrassed. You know, we lost 8-2 at Old Trafford. We lost in an FA Cup game. I've got to be honest, I got thrown out of the stadium when we got knocked out of the FA Cup by Manchester United and we lost 6-1. I think on the fourth goal, a Man United fan right on the border was giving me some grief and I responded and I got chucked out straight away. But, you know, those kind of games, they were hard to take. And for me now, the one positive is that I go into these games and I don't fear that we're going to get absolutely humiliated. And I think from Mikel Arteta's point of view, I know it seems a little too risk averse and I know it feels like we don't really have enough about us to go and take the game to them. But to me, the way I would look at it is it's part of the confidence building. It's part of the confidence building to be able to look back, you know, when it comes to the end of the season and Arsenal look back over the course of this season and try and assess where they are. You know, Mikel Arteta can sit there and say, well, we only got beaten by one goal on the odd goal by Manchester City twice in the league, 1-0 and 1-0, because we competed with them for the most part. And I think that having taken over a side that was so clearly lacking in confidence, that was getting battered in some of the big games, maybe not under Unai Emery, but prior to that, I think Mikel is looking at this as it's part of the longer term thing. Yeah.
Well, I do have to say that, like, I was listening to, I don't know what podcast it was. I was listening to a whole bunch the other day, but I know Clive was saying that he was looking at some Manchester City forums and stuff like that to see what they thought of the game. And they actually were saying that that was the toughest game that they had played out of all the games, you know, that they've won in this long run. And I was kind of shocked at that. I'm like, they thought that we were the hardest team to play, you know? So maybe it's just a matter of me just feeling like it's more of a, I want to see us competing in these games, but in reality, we're not at the place where we can, you know, and I do feel like maybe I would flip flop if we had gotten beat 4-0 and been like, why don't you keep it tight? You know, because I'm a fan and that's, you know, that's kind of like how it is, you know, but I did feel a little bit disappointed, but ultimately all is forgiven if we beat Benfica, you know, like we weren't supposed to beat Manchester City. So I'm not going to hold on to it. I'm going to forget about it soon, you know?
Yeah, no, completely agree. Going into the Benfica game then, it very much is Europa League or bust now, isn't it? It feels as though the Premier League, you know, whilst it's not mathematically possible for us to qualify for Europe, it does feel like it is very, very unlikely now. And, you know, if you were Mikel Arteta, how would you approach the remaining Premier League games? Would you take your foot off the gas a little bit? Do you think that momentum is key? What way are you kind of looking at this?
You know, if I was Mikel Arteta, so if I had great hair and I was a good looking guy with a little bit of scruff standing on the sidelines, you know, with my nice jacket and all that kind of stuff, what I would do is I would still play for both because nobody's form is good enough. Like, I don't think mathematically we're still in it to still qualify for something in the league. But for me, it would be just more of a confidence thing, maybe finishing 8th or 7th. Over 10th, you know, that's not a good look. You know, I think as a fan base, we would be more forgiving if we came in like 7th and we did a deep run into the Europa League versus just 10th. I think when you pick one or the other, that's really, really risky. And I think we should just, what I would do if I was him, I would stop tinkering and stop over rotating and play my best team in as many games as possible and try to gain some consistency and some form, because when we played the same team for like that one little period of time, we did really well. You know, it was like the same team. We knew who was going to play. It was like Holding, Pablo Marie, you know, Emile Smith Rowe, Saka, Lacazette and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think our best team is a little bit different now. I want him to just continue to play that team, get a little bit of consistency. We have like Aston Villa, I think, or no, West Ham, Leicester, Spurs, and like Everton coming up in between, and like Burnley in there. We need to take some points off of these teams. I think if we play our best team and we take some points off of those teams, we might be in a different position. you know, but I'm afraid that if we start prioritizing one over the other a little bit early, we'll look back and see all the teams are dropping points because they're not doing that great either. And we may have missed something. We still may not qualify, but I'm just saying, like, I'd rather come in seventh or eighth than 10th or 12th. You know, that's just me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think he's got to continue in the Premier League, and he's got to continue showing progress to keep the fans on side, and also to persuade the club that he is worth backing in the summer. So, you know, there's lots still to play for, although in terms of our league position, it doesn't look great. There is, of course...
It's about the optics, though, isn't it, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's like the optics need to look better. If you're in seventh and you got to, like, the quarterfinals or the semifinals of the Europa League, that mentally is better and a better bargaining chip for the summer than 10th or 12th, and you didn't win the Europa League.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Just having a look at the comments. Guys, get your questions in. We're going to come to some questions in just a moment. But I feel like I've got to clarify what happened in this game at Old Trafford now.
Where I was
thrown out because I'm being called a hooligan and all sorts. I think I've got to clarify what happened. So get your questions in while I tell you guys this quick story. So basically what happened was I found out it was a Saturday. I think it was a 5:30 game, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's right. Saturday, 5:30. And I was desperately trying to get a ticket for this trip to Old Trafford. And I got a call at about 7:30 in the morning from a friend of mine. And he said, Harry, I've got us two tickets, but we have to go and collect them from Euston Station. So we have to go into central London to collect them and then go up to Manchester. So we met up, we got on the train, we shot down to Euston, we bought the tickets. A friend of mine who was already going to the game said, well, I'm driving up there, so you might as well jump in with us. So we jumped in, we had a great trip, we got to the match. Arsenal got absolutely hammered, and I was a lot younger then, I was a lot more immature then, and I simply couldn't take Arsenal getting beaten by Manchester United. You know, you've got to remember that when I was growing up, the Arsenal-Manchester United rival was the thing. I didn't even care about Tottenham. Tottenham were irrelevant at that point. They were nowhere near us. They were a mid-table team. No problem whatsoever. Every time we played them, we beat them. It was never an issue. So Man United was the real thing for me. And I happened to be sitting two or three seats from the border where they split the home and the away fans. And I think when Manchester United's fourth goal went in, this Manchester United fan literally was just giving it to me throughout the entire game, picking on me. And I knew he was talking about me because he kept making reference to the colour of my jacket, everything. And when the fourth goal went in, he stepped up onto the row of seats in between us as if he was going to climb over. And he started shouting all sorts of abuse. And I literally turned around and I stuck my middle finger up at him. And he was doing this to me. And I just literally, I went, wait till this game finishes. I'll see you outside. And then I look up and I look over my left shoulder and I see three stewards running down the stairs in the stadium. And I went, nah, that can't be for me. I haven't done anything yet. And before I knew it, one of them came behind me, grabbed my head, pushed it down. The other one put my arms behind my back and they dragged me down the stairs of Old Trafford through this little gateway into the home fans. They took me through a row of home fans who were all giving it. And I got taken outside and pushed up against the wall by three guys who said to me, you're not in London now, son.
And that was it.
And they kicked me out of the game. So I had to wait outside for 20 minutes while my mates finished watching the game. And then we left and went home. But yeah, it was a horrible thing. But
That's so funny, though.
Yeah, maybe it makes me a bit of a hero. I don't know. We'll see.
This is hilarious to me. I've never seen anybody do that in real life. That's so funny.
Literally, the guy was doing this. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll do it back, whatever. But yeah, crazy. Enigma says, sorry for that. You never even got a punch in. Chris says, love the fact you got chucked out of the ground, thug hooligan. Yeah, look, I didn't get to that point, but at that age and the way I used to be when it came to Arsenal at that point, I might have actually gone a little bit further. I'm not even going to lie. So thankfully, I got stopped before that happened. Right, let's go over to some of your questions whilst you're all throwing the hooligan comment at me.
I love it.
I love it, exactly. This is a really good one from Harry, one of our members. He says, if we lose to Benfica, how does Arteta convince the fans that he's the right man to take us forward? Can we quote the FA Cup run? Can we talk about a better bit of better form since playing a number 10? Jess, I'll let you go forward on this one. If you were now making the case to the Arsenal board as to why they should keep Mikel Arteta in the event that we go out of the Europa League, what would be the things that you look at and point to?
Oh, it's going to be tough, right? If we lose to Benfica, how does he convince? The only way that he'll be able to convince the fans and even the club that he's the right man, or maybe just the fans, is with a better run of form in the league. If he loses now and he's out, he has absolutely no excuse but to play your best team every single game from this moment on. And for me, it would be he would really need to improve in the league to a point where it's not 20 minutes here, 45 minutes here, you know, a little run of form here. Like, he needs to put in, like, you know, some sustained form. You know, I was saying that, you know, he would be in the Europa League and maybe try to get into seventh place or something like that. I would think that he would need to be knocking on the door for Europe at least, you know, to convince, you know, it's not all about the results and where we finish in the league, and, you know, but it's just because some of the football has been so dire, and then on top of the fact we're in 10th or, you know, 10th place, it's bad. So I think if he loses to Benfica, he needs to be knocking on the door for Europe and playing a decent brand of football, you know, moving forward. I mean, I'm not going to kill him because I know it's very unlikely that we'll win the Europa League. So if we go out now or we do a deep run, you know, whatever. But for me, Arteta, at the bare minimum, regardless of what competitions we in, I need to see a better brand of football, playing 90 minutes well and taking some points off of the teams that are above us, you know, in this next run here, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much all of that. I think it's about the football that we're going to play. It's about, I actually think that we need to go on a good run in the Europa League. And I think, you know, if you lose in the semi-final to a side that were better than you on the day, you can kind of live with that. Going out in the round of 32, though, is not acceptable.
Not 2 years in a row. That's going to be a really, that's going to be a really tough pill to swallow, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I was at both legs of the game against Olympiacos last season.
And we
got knocked out. So I'm hoping that because I can't go to either against Benfica, we might do okay. Top Techers says, Harry and Jess, what do you think would constitute a successful season for us? And I think we kind of touched on that one in that last one. But that, of course, thank you for your question. Ashton says, Harry moving like a GTA character at Old Trafford. Harry Land says, you want summer? Yep, I love that. What else have we got here? Alex McCarthy says, moral of the story, Old Trafford sucks. It absolutely does. It's a horrible stadium, by the way. So overrated.
I want to go there at least one time before, you know, I have to just be there at least once, you know.
With Old Trafford and Anfield as well, there's this myth that they have really great atmospheres. Old Trafford is horrendous in terms of the atmosphere. It is dead as a doornail. It's horrible. And Anfield, I only seem to see it be good on a European night on TV, but in the Premier League it's been very sort of dull when I've experienced it. So yeah, not great. Matt says, Jess, have you ever been kicked out of a game?
No, but the first game that I ever went to as an Arsenal game at the Emirates was Arsenal versus Brighton in the Unai Emery season, and I was there when Granit Xhaka got the penalty. Yeah, I could have got kicked out that day. I mean, and it was so weird because we were like up in the club section or the club, you know, that little section. And I was looking down and I saw the away fans and they were, you know, flipping me the bird and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this is insane. But I loved it. But I haven't been kicked out. But I could have got kicked out that day because I was so angry. Like, that was, yeah. You guys, if you watched it on TV or you were there too, you know, that was not a good game. It wasn't. Yep.
No, completely agree. Ashton says, Harry, next time you're in trouble, call your subs. We're going to ride or die. I will do. I'll get the Chronicle subscribers down there. We'll sort them out. What else have we got here? Let's, Apparently, I'm shocking people with all these stories. Jeez. I just saw a really good question. Where's it gone? Here we go. Jashar says, in light of the faith shown in Willian, do you think Nelson, Willock, Maitland-Niles and Nketiah have been given a fair chance under Arteta? I'll kick off on this one because as harsh as this might sound, Nelson, Willock, Maitland-Niles and Eddie Nketiah, none of them are good enough for Arsenal Football Club. If you want to sit here and demand a certain level from your club, if you want to see Arsenal at the very pinnacle of English football again, then you cannot rely on people like this. Rhys Nelson, when he has been given opportunities, has done okay at times. Willock, okay at times. Maitland-Niles has got an attitude that absolutely stinks. The guy is determined to play in midfield, so he goes and joins the worst club in the division, who are ultimately going to bypass their midfield just purely because of the way they play. A really unhelpful loan move, in my opinion. And Eddie Nketiah has had plenty of chances as well. The thing is, at the very, very top level, you can sit there and say, have the youngsters had enough opportunities? But the youngsters at this level have to take those opportunities. It is so, so important. Gabriel Martinelli has taken those opportunities. Bukayo Saka has taken those opportunities.
Smith Rowe
has taken those opportunities. Whereas those guys you've mentioned there, Jashar, I think have all been pretty average overall. And I don't think they're the way forward. What's your view, Jess?
You know, I can agree. I agree 100% with that. I think we have to separate Willian from other people, and not just because you don't like Willian doesn't mean that Nelson should be playing. Well, Nelson has done nothing up to this point for me to warrant any more playing time. Whenever he goes out there, he doesn't have end product, you know. And as a young player trying to break into the Arsenal side, it may be okay to have, you know, skill and to show promise at Crystal Palace and their academy and stuff like that. But at Arsenal, like as a young player that's trying to break through, you have to be a special talent. And you're seeing that it's Emile Smith Rowe and it's Saka and Martinelli. They're all special talents. These guys are, they may have been good at academy level. I know Nelson had a big, he had a lot of people saying that he was going to be the one to break through. But for me, he doesn't have enough of much. You know, I don't think you would see anything different from him and Willian at this point. And we can't just because we don't like Willian doesn't mean somebody else should be playing in that spot. You know, Nelson hasn't done anything. Willock, we don't know where he fits in. I think he has a good attitude, unlike Maitland-Niles, but maybe he's just not good enough. Maitland-Niles, I completely agree with this loan situation that he's in. Not a good move, especially if he's trying to get into the England team for the Euros. You're not going to do that playing midfield at West Brom. And Nketiah has had more than enough opportunities, and he's just not good enough. So, you know, I don't like Willian, but these players also don't need to be playing either. You know,
agreed.
So that's
me. And with Maitland-Niles, he's got to realise that the only chance he has of getting in, or had of getting in, that England squad is because of his versatility, because of his ability to play on the right, on the left, maybe in the middle as well. That was what I think may have tipped the balance for Gareth Southgate when selecting his squad. But Maitland-Niles is a midfielder. He doesn't even compete. You know, he's not even in the conversation for me. Alex McCarthy says, forget the finances. Would a season out of Europe altogether benefit Arteta and the players next year? We know financially it would be a fucking disaster. Excuse my language. But Jess, in your opinion, would it help us from a footballing standpoint?
Yes. And the reason why is because what I said before is Arteta is an amazing coach. I believe in that 110%. And what he needs to be able to do, like if you looked at the way how prepared we were for that Leeds United game, that's because we had a whole week to prepare for it. And Arteta is the king of getting his stats and his tactics together and being able to get the team on the pitch and on the training pitch and learning what they need to learn and get better and all that kind of stuff. I think that would really help us without midweek games. You know, that's what he really needs. And he hasn't had a true preseason, you know, and I don't think he's had enough because of the fixture congestion. He hasn't had enough time on the training pitch, but I would like to see it. But from a financial standpoint,
Yeah. You know. Completely agree. Just looking at some of the questions. Now, this is the type of question I'm going to get now, isn't it? Matt, Harry, which of the current squad do you think you'd beat up in a fight? I'd have to think about this one. I'm a good guy, man. I'm not a thug, right? Let's put that to bed. Just a quick reminder, though. If you haven't already, make sure you smash the like button, because I can see there's over 150 of you watching us live at the minute. And plenty more are going to watch this on replay. But we've only had 43 likes. So let's get it up to 100.
That's bad, you guys. Least. Smash the likes.
See, if Jess says it, it means you've got to do it. Mm-hmm. Jess, this is one for you. And as it's your first time on the show, I'm going to put this one to you. What made you become a Guna? I'm always interested to know how fans from overseas end up falling in love with Arsenal. Because for us, it's kind of easier, of course, because of the proximity to the club, because all our friends at school and all of that, you know, everybody's into football here. It's our main sport. In America, though, it's not the main sport. And how did you end up following a club like Arsenal?
Yeah, so, okay, I've told this story so many times, but I think it's a good story anyway. So I used to play, don't kill me, but we call it soccer here. I used to play soccer. Don't kill me, you know, so.
People get funny about that. And I don't understand why.
Soccer. It's like, that's just what we call it here. You know, so I played growing up. I played from 6 to all the way through college. And, you know, when I was younger, I loved to actually watch the game. I was obsessed from the moment I started playing, the point where I wanted to watch all the time. But in America, you could only really find MLS games, or, you know, the U.S. women were really big at the time. So you could watch them. And maybe some of the Mexican league, but that was pretty much it until they started to televise some of the English Premier League games, but they only would pick the best teams to show. So the first English Premier League game that I ever watched was a Manchester United game, you know, so I saw them and I was like, okay, cool. This is my team. This is who I'm going to choose. So I was actually a Manchester United fan for like 5 minutes. And then the next weekend, they televised an Arsenal game, and my mom was like, you know, my mom is really supportive of me, so she wanted to try to find games for me. And she was like, hey, I see this team's playing, come over here and watch. And we started watching, and it was Arsenal. And my mom literally was calling Thierry Henry, Thierry Henry. Look at this Thierry Henry. Number 14 is so good, you know. So I'm watching, and it's, you know, Edu and Gilberto and Lauren and Ashley Cole. And for me, I was always the only Black kid on any soccer team that I was on, or any team I was on, in any class that I was in. So seeing a team full of Black players that were really good was really good for me. Like, it made me, you know, it was really good for me. And so I fell in love with the team from there. That was probably 2002, maybe something like that. I'm older
Pete
than
Vengable.
I was, guys. Yeah.
Pete
so,
Vengable.
Yep. And I loved it. You know, so I've been a fan ever since. I was able to go to Highbury, but not for a game. I've done a tour, and so far I've been to 2 Arsenal games in real life. And as soon as coronavirus is done, I'm going. I need to go to like 4 or 5 games because I miss it. You know, I miss it.
You need to pick a nice period where we've got a few games in a row that
yes.
you can get to. That would be good. Mm-hmm. Interesting story. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit disappointed that you like Manchester United first.
That's all I knew. That's cut deep.
Of all the teams.
But I switched right away. Like, I was like, oh no, this is my team for sure. You know? So, yeah.
We can forgive you for that then. We can forgive it. Mm-hmm. Brilliant stuff. Right, guys, get your predictions into the live chat for the game against Benfica. I'm going to be bringing you another stream prior to the game where I'll be going through my team and prediction, as I always do. But in the meantime, get your predictions in. Jess, remind us again how people can keep up with your excellent work. They can see your Twitter handle on the screen. It's Jessinho. But for your YouTube channel, how can they find it? How can they find your show?
Yeah, so for Shino's Arsenal, at the moment, it's on the Bearded Gooners channel. And I highly suggest that you subscribe to his channel as well. He does really good work. So if you just go into the YouTube search bar, put in the Bearded Gooner, and you'll find She Knows Arsenal, that show, and all of his shows, which are really good. And I also have my own channel, Jessinho TV. Just put it in the search bar. You'll see my face and just subscribe. So that's where you'll find me. And yeah, I'm going to be doing some more live shows. And She Knows Arsenal is obviously, it's every week. you know, we do the post-match show and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'll see you there.
Make sure you go over and check it out. I'll update the description as well and drop a link in there too. Let's see what you guys are saying in terms of your predictions. V-Rogue says 2-0. Mr. A says 3-1 to the Arsenal. French Beat says 2-1 Arsenal. Ultima Spell says 3-0. Ashana Bode, I think I've said that right, says Arsenal 4, Benfica 1. KC says 2-0 Arsenal. And Pat Moyle says, we just have to keep a clean sheet. 1-0 will do. Jashar says, after the social club, I've retired from the predictions. Jashar, was it you that did it last week? Because the results are in, by the way. But we're recording a social club tonight, so I won't reveal it yet. But what I will say is, Jashar, you didn't do too badly, mate. You didn't do too badly at all. But join me tonight for the social club. We'll be discussing it a little bit later on. Right, that brings us to the end of the show. Jess, thank you so, so much for your time. And I know the time difference is quite big as well. So really no appreciate you fitting it in. Love to have you on again soon. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I've had so much fun. And yeah, we'll do this again sometime.
For sure. Make sure you check out Jess on social media and, of course, her brilliant work over on YouTube. We'll be back very, very soon with another live edition of the Chronicles of Iguna. Until then, take care. Hit the like button on your way out. All the best.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Iguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.